KPRO.
And welcome back to Sound Off. This is Jamie Umfenauer in the KPRL Sound Off Studios, and we are joined this hour by author Deborah Kruger, and she has been, and she's been here before. She was talking about her book, Let's Play Gratitude with Life's Sticky Situations, and we're glad to have her back to talk about something new. We're going to talk old and new. So welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you, Jamie. It's an honor to be back, and I feel like I got to know you so well in our first interview. It's like we're buddies.
There we go. And it's perfect timing because Thanksgiving is really close.
Closer than yes.
Yes, it's really early this year. But we're going to talk about gratitude, and we're going to start, you know, angling it towards children. Yeah. And anybody who's worked with kids or has kids know this is really an issue nowadays. It's not the same as when we were growing up.
And definitely not. And no. I have a few years on you, and it wasn't even anything like this. And I think most people are aware, maybe not to the degree, but they're aware.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to turn right there. Okay, that should be better, Deborah.
Thank you.
Well, before we get into the how and the why part, let's maybe talk a little bit about, you know, your personal background. How did you get into becoming an author, but particularly about gratitude, because it's such a different topic for people to focus on?
And the work is kind of a combination, how I approach it. I got into the New Age movement, therefore spiritual teachings. So that's a lot of it. And then because with my training background, I break things down. So
you were in like sales training.
Sales and training and service. But when the story I'm going to share in a moment, when this all happened, I just kind of went into my innate ability, if you will, to bring that all together. So I had discovered the power of gratitude, but I wanted to share it with people. So that's how it came about. I didn't have any plans for that, but because it had been so life-changing for me, being so clinically depressed and on the edge of being in a mental institution, I knew that if it could help people, that was my role or my mission to be able to do that.
Because you were able to come out the other side, where, I mean, depression, you know, we probably saw what happened in Thousand Oaks today, you know, is a depression issue where it has that very bad end, and you were able to come out on the good side.
Yes, it was only because I had actually mentored a shipping manager when I was in corporate America. His niece had committed suicide, and he would just cry buckets in my office for months. But because of that and the remorse and the what if, what could I have done, I got to that point, but I could not do that to my family and my friends. So you can only imagine when people, they say all it takes is one person, but the people beyond that, the Robin Williams or whatever, they get to that black hole to the degree that not even that. So it's important for us to all to recognize these aren't disorders or imbalances that people choose to have. But whether you're a stranger, just reaching out, mm-hmm. it can make the difference in whether that person becomes more clinically depressed or ends up going over the edge.
Mm-hmm. Or turning the boat around.
Exactly.
And that's what you did, was something hit you, something spoke to you to where you're like, wait a minute, I need to change something.
Yes, and it was that desperation. It's not something tangible when you're in that clinical depressed state. It's an energy, and I work with energy. That's what I was starting to say before. So you feel it consuming you, but it has a depth and immensity that you cannot even describe. I refer to it as the black hole of the Grand Canyon, but that's just a metaphor. It's beyond that. It's bigger than the universe. And I started feeling it sucking me in for quite some time. That's when you become clinical. But when I felt it pulling, sucking me into where I was going over the edge, I called my sister. She'd been a lifeline, and she was in the nursing profession as a caseworker. And she got calls all the time because people had gone off their meds, and she had to go to ER and so forth. So when I called her, and I was suicidal, but I was reaching out, she was my lifeline, she got, wow, and she was on the East Coast. But I told her I had to find some joy, and if I had to fake it till I made it. But I had had quite a series of events lead up to that that were each one of them enough to take most people over the edge, but, you know, over a seven-month period of time, they got me to that point mm-hmm. of that phone call to my sister.
And life happened. You know, you were hit with different events, and that just piled up, and that black hole grew.
Well, it started out with how I'd gone through a year and a half bitter separation with my husband, and we were in dissolution. He was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, and he wanted me back in his life to help him live or die. Well, that took soul searching, but then the surgery, so that was in July, he had surgery in September. They don't take enough out if you want to live to have you become a vegetable, but he went right from ICU to the nursing home, where you go to die. Mm-hmm. I don't do nursing homes. I don't even do OWIs. So this was a huge issue for me to even walk through the doors. And then that couple months later, I had a friend that was a business associate. I was in sales, commission sales, and developing a whole territory up here for a company in Santa Barbara. We strategized where she was going to help me, and I would pay her to help with sales calls and so forth. She was really good with that. Well, she calls me up the beginning of December and said, "Guess what, Deb? I want to go work full time for the company." Never once said, "Are you sitting down?" Or you know, "What are we going to do instead?" Well, I didn't just feel betrayed. I'm like, "Oh my goodness, we had a whole year, you know, planned out." Well, then I went through the holidays. No other friends were showing up at the nursing home. It was just me. Mm-hmm. That wasn't very fun or nice. At the end of January, a huge project fell through. No fault of my own, but that was a huge commission income, potential income for several months. My husband passed away early February. Mm-hmm. Valentine's Day, I got a call from a friend, dear friend. We'd had a brief romantic interlude, and I wanted to stay friends, but that wasn't working for him. So he called me on Valentine's Day and said, "Guess what?" So then I felt abandoned from that. And at the end of February, another project because of a merger. My whole year of income had disappeared within 2 months. That's when I had to call my sister. So that was the series.
This is one thing after another.
Major
after
thing.
Another. Major, yeah. One alone is a major thing. One alone is a major thing. And to have them stack up mm-hmm. like that. And so, but you got to the point you said, I need to find joy even if I'm going to fake it. And I think that's really important because we joke around a lot, "Oh, fake it till you make it," you know, and to be able to somehow find that in you to fake it till you make it, obviously you've made it.
Well, and I had my sister, bless her heart, she knew she had to pull out all the stops, but she'd also been mentoring a friend, and she knew by nature that I had to always have it be the top or the best or the perfect. And she's like, "Deb, don't have you know, such aspirations. Just be grateful you get out of bed in the morning. Keep it simple and build on that." So, you know, the next morning I got out of bed and wasn't doing any better, but that was all I could cling to. It was the only thing because she wasn't there. She lived on the East Coast. So I did that. I you know, started out with something funny now, but, you know, I'm grateful I have a bed to, because when you're in that state, your brain doesn't work. You have no emotions. You really are redefining the term faking it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent a few days doing that, going around my condo, no feelings. And midweek, because of the way I was raised and a lot of, in my midlife, reasons to cause me more to be in that thankful mode, I went to turn on the water. And it occurred to me, wow. And I still to this day think that the universe was helping me, but I realized I took that for granted.
Mm-hmm.
So that allowed me to start having a different attitude.
To be grateful yes. that you even had water coming through your sink.
Yes.
Okay. And so we're going to hit the pause button there, and then we'll return with Deborah Kruger, and we're going to talk a little bit more about her story, and then we're going to turn the focus onto children and why children are, it's important to teach them about gratitude, especially nowadays. So stay tuned. This is Jamie Umfenauer for Sound Off. And welcome back to Sound Off. This is Jamie Umfenauer in the KPRL Sound Off studios. And we are back. We're joined this hour by author Deborah Kruger. And Deborah was telling us before the break about a very personal situation that led her to the point where she became an author. So, Deborah, how did you go from just life happened times 10 and that deep depression, which I think isn't a surprise for people when you have that much happen to you at one time or within a series of months. And like we left at the break, you know, you said, I'm grateful that the water turns on.
And at that time, I still didn't have any feelings, but that's where once you learn about energy, thought is power. So just thinking that, and because of spiritual teachings, I knew, and again, I was grasping for anything, keep going through the motions, Deb, but if you have things that you can say you're grateful for that that you haven't been aware of, that you take for granted, that gives it another dimension of depth and therefore a higher level of energy.
Do you find that a lot of people really forget to be grateful for the little things in life? The water, that I have a roof over my head and a bed to sleep in.
Yes, and I won't say it's because we don't want to or we don't intend to. It's just that it's not just that life is so busy. We just don't think about that until we have a reason to, or it's one of the gratitude games that I had fun playing. So it's nice to have reminders. And again, from an energy standpoint, the universe doesn't care what you're grateful for. All it knows is that's the energy that you're at. So you're going to attract and create more at that point. You create a vortex either way. Energy is neutral. Something comes along to cause it to be, and Newton taught all this for every action. And so you're either going in a vortex downward, spiraling downward or upward. And also, from a scale of 1 to 10, with anger and hatred being at the bottom, gratitude is about a 6 because it's a catalyst for appreciation and then joy, getting up to bliss, and then at the highest is love.
And that's what we all strive for. Isn't love the most basic human want? To be loved?
It is, and I believe from my upbringing and everything that I've been taught that that's what we came here to be. But we do have choice. Mm-hmm. And every minute of every day, our choice either comes from our heart. You can never go wrong when you come from your heart, which means you are coming from love. There's no guarantees in life, but there are some things you can say ever and never, and you will always, always have a positive, loving outcome when you come from your heart, as opposed to your mind, which can tend to be more ego-oriented. Now, we need our ego, but they need to be in the co-pilot seat and not
and have a balance in there.
Yes, and we call it balance, as Western folks, Eastern folks call it yin and yang. It's just semantics, but it's all neutral energy, and we need a little of both, but the tsunami is the big masculine energy, and we can, if we stop something and the power of thought, we stop that from crashing down, and we want to be balancing that with the ebb tide, a more feminine energy. So I like to use those analogies, because when you just talk about energy, people are like, what? Because it isn't tangible. Mm-hmm. But we can visualize.
Yeah, and we can all understand those emotions and where they are in that lineup. And if love and hate or anger are as polar opposite as they can be.
They definitely are. And again, a demonstration that I usually do early on in my presentations or workshops, just a real quick one. So think of a sticky issue, meaning something that's just happened and you're all caught into the negative emotions of it. And just feel how your body feels. You know, you're negative, you're constricted. It's certainly not fun or nice. Okay, that's all we need to do. Now switch to something you're grateful for. And let yourself feel it. Whether it's the blue sky or the sunset or your pet or a spouse or a sport, what happened to your sticky issue? And that's the beauty of this work. It's not me. It's the way energy is. When you can't be in two opposing energies, and another fun way I have of describing gratitude, you can only go up from there because it's the catalyst. You are going to create that positive upward vortex. So the law of attraction isn't spiritual. They just made it popular. It means that when you are in any level of energy, that's all that you can bring to you, whether it's opportunities, inspirations, events, the same with the other. It takes gradual steps to go from one to the other. So if you're going down that rabbit hole like I was, there is nothing that can stop it unless you have a major intervention that's going to cause that to go back to a more neutral state, which is what that call to my sister did.
And her mentioning to be grateful. You need to be grateful that, you know, get out of bed. That you
just
can get out
things.
Of bed.
Yeah. We make it so big and complex, and certainly everything is these days. It doesn't have to be. The energy doesn't make it that way. We do.
Yeah. So how did you go from being grateful, your sister telling you, you need to be grateful for the fact that you can get out of bed, to being able to now have write a book? And really, and we'll talk about, there's a nonprofit part to it. But you wrote a book called Let's Play Gratitude with Life's Sticky Situations. I'm sorry?
Life's Sticky Issues.
Life's Sticky Issues.
Same difference.
Yes. it's all semantics, right? But the name of the book is important, The Sticky Issues. How did that develop from that dark place and being grateful for getting out of bed?
Well, thanks for asking. Because she was not only my lifeline, but my sister, and I felt accountable because she was kind of hanging on the edge of her seat. I called her just a couple days later, and I could feel a slight shift. But anything when you're in that level of depression is a godsend. So she could tell it, too. I don't have a poker voice. And she, I say this seriously, though, she said, I'm taking you off my critical list. Well, with my nature and wanting to put as much distance between that feeling, I certainly wasn't out of it instantly, but I chose to focus on how can I perpetuate this and make it bigger than life. And so I knew that at some point I would get back into my sales career. I'd just kind of been doing the little amount possible. And so I realized there's a lot of times in our day that we're just waiting in line or the stop sign or what have you, where I could play these games. And I made them simple. One of the most fun ones to me is peel something like an onion, whether it's an event or a person. And when you think you're done, well, just give it some time. And you will have more things come. And those are the real gems. And that's when you go to that higher level of appreciation or love, because those gems come out. And that's really the core of that gratitude. So you don't always get that at once. But look at what's happening to your energy. And then I take it to another level, and I will call or write or meet with that person and let them know. And they're like, wow. Because when you verbalize or articulate something, it just gives it that much more heartfelt message, but it's all about energy. So you're helping yours as well as theirs.
There's nothing better than getting a spontaneous note or a call from somebody. Just, hey, thank you for this or that. I mean, it really makes a difference. I think especially nowadays.
Yes.
It's because we're in such a different place society-wise that that gratefulness, those little simple, and I think simple is probably one of the things I'm really getting from you.
Well, that's my mantra. Our work, my work is simple, easy, and fun. Fun being the gratitude games, but the techniques and tools may not be the easiest to apply because starting out, things take practice. But it is as simple as a four-step process that I developed. I took all my spiritual teachings and all this pages of notes, and I thought, okay, I need to break this down, something easy for me to remember, and then if I wanted to share it with people. But back to your point, I did this way back in corporate America when one of my people, I was in management, or somebody else provided good service. I sent their boss, the president, human resource, got copies of some type of acknowledgement. When I had sales appointments, if it was a fairly major client, I would write a personal handwritten thank you note. And invariably, when I showed up for that appointment, I hadn't met him yet. It was, a phone call or something. It was on their bulletin board or their desk. But now, like you say, people are so busy. The power that it gives you and what they get with their energy, that you have taken time and it doesn't take that long, but it's the heartfelt. It's more than about time. Mm-hmm. It just has such volumes and depths to it, and it helps for me get me back to just step out of that busy mode for a moment, and then it has such power to grow and perpetuate itself. I call it the gratitude ripple, mm-hmm. which is great.
And let's twist this to kids, because you wrote your adult book, which is good for everybody, mm-hmm. Which is the Let's Play Gratitude with Life Sticky Issues, which is a very simple book. It's you can put it in your purse. Mm-hmm. Just is a great way to work with ourselves on being grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And but then we have kids, and kids of all ages. And if anybody's worked with kids, it nowadays it is different. I personally have seen a few different problems. We have entitlement, where kids think they're entitled to everything. And then we have kids struggling with things that I think we never would have dealt with. Well, we never had social media. We never had a lot of these issues that kids have to deal with. It makes life a little harder, I think, than what it was like when we were kids.
And I guess to add to that, what I learned last year, I was doing volunteering at different places, hospice and so forth, a lot of, you know, administrative work, and it got kind of boring. And in a chat one day with my dad, he's like, well, why don't you go help kids? Kids need help with reading. So I ended up at some of the local elementary schools helping low readers, kids that were behind their grade because they hadn't had help up until then. And I got an eyeful and an earful of what really is going on. I was inspired by my nieces and nephews almost 10 years ago to go to the children's level with a book. But even then, issues, you know, things were starting to happen with bullying, but social media was not where it is now. And I'm going to just step aside for a minute. I'm not placing blame, but if we look to where have they picked this up, kids aren't born being prejudiced. They aren't born caring about what all their issues are or somebody else's. We, without realizing it, we've given them a blueprint. Example, how many decades ago did we start doing negative ad campaigns for running for president? Mm. You know, the highest, most revered position in the world back then. To what you say at the dinner table or in the ride to the car, and kids pick, well, they respect us. They want to, you know, be an example, and based on what we're teaching them without realizing it. So the label role model, I don't know that usually has a real positive connotation, and I don't think we realize that the role models that we are displaying for our kids maybe aren't on the level that they could be.
I couldn't agree with you more on that, Deborah. There's the some of the role modeling that we see is not healthy.
Well, and then something else we'll talk about, the simple technique that I developed. But the first step, if everyone, children, adults, everyone stopped and took responsibility. We blame, we shame, we point fingers, we judge. That's all making it about them. Mm-hmm. If we just let that go and left that at the door and said, I'm going to own this. I'm going to take responsibility and empower myself. That will stop. If the whole world did that, we would not have any negativity. We really would.
Yeah.
And the problems would solve themselves, because that's how energy works.
Personal accountability is something that people try to stay away from.
Yeah.
That we need more of.
Well, we're afraid. We haven't been taught how. But we think we're giving our power away. And we aren't taught. We're taught that selfishness is a narcissistic thing. But there's always a positive side to a lot of these words. Empowerment is being selfish. It's about caring about yourself enough to go within and make those changes and do things that are going to have you come from that place of empowerment, which taking responsibility is one of the quickest things that you can do. But it doesn't just have a ripple effect. It stops that energy cold. You can't have an argument. You can't have people defending. You shift their energy. It just stops a situation, and you don't have to know what's going on. It's just the way energy works. So this is what we're going to be teaching kids. But if adults, if we just started doing that and let the kids follow, oh, my goodness.
It would be so much easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the book, The Red Pencil, A Dragon's Tooth and the Lost Treasure. So stay tuned.
Sound Off.
And welcome back to Sound Off. This is Jamie Umfenauer in the KPRL Sound Off studios. And we are back with author Deborah Kruger. And she's the author of Let's Play Gratitude with Life's Sticky Issues. But we're going to talk about the new children's book that's almost ready to be out there on Amazon, which is called The Red Pencil, A Dragon's Tooth and Lost Treasure. How do you come up with, I've always wondered this, for people who write children's books, how does this and the characters just happen?
Well, they didn't. I was inspired by my nieces and nephews, and I worked with a retired teacher to help, because I didn't know anything about writing children's books. I just knew that I wanted to. And so the story came from my childhood. I was quite the tomboy. I didn't play dolls or dress up. I had a younger brother, so everything from train to Lincoln Logs when it was, you know, outside forts, and I still have a root canal from trying to catch a hardball looking into the sun, and I missed. But so the kids, and we wanted to create sticky issues and so forth, they meet in the lunchroom, and they're different ages, and already they're issues. But they decided that they wanted to get together. They were all the new kids, or the ones that were picked on. And so they met under this tree. And when we wrote the book, because she was a retired teacher, we wanted to build things in, analogies, so the tree becomes the wise old tree, and Casey uses big words, so that's where we could bring vocabulary into it. So they met, but then it's like, well, we want a clubhouse, because the last part of the title is The Red Pencil, A Dragon's Tooth and the Lost Treasure, A Gratitude Club Adventure. So because it's recession time, we bring that in to address, you know, not having enough money for different reasons. They get resourceful, and so we're teaching a lot of life skills as well. So they get all that orange plastic stuff from the construction site and some 2x4s, and then Randy, the girl, brings things from home that we're going to go to Goodwill, and Casey brings an old, you know, soccer trophy. But they make this little clubhouse, and that's where they meet. And then they all go to school, but then they start. So because we wanted the story to have them teach themselves about the halo technique, which is four steps, they discover this on their own. They've got these huge issues. Randy's part Asian and Caucasian. The kids can't tell the difference, so that's a huge bullying issue. She likes to wear pigtails. Well, that's not the in thing. Her mom has cancer. She has clinical anxiety, and, you know, that makes it difficult for her to deal with daily life. Ridge, he's the only African-American in the school. Well, that has its issues. And his brother, when he's home from the military with PTSD. That mixed up. Well, he bullies him. And his parents are divorced. His mom doesn't live in the same city. So when there's events, she can't come to school. Well, the kids make fun of him for that. And then Casey, he's the computer nerd, as we would call it, you know, the glasses and all that. Well, he loves learning so much, he brings his books to school in recess. Well, kids are resentful, so they give him a hard time for that. He uses big words. That's where we bring the vocabulary in, so they, you know, are resentful. And then because his dad lost his job, heaven forbid, he has to wear last year's soccer uniforms to this year's practices and games. So those are the highlights of why they get bullied. And in the books, they're going to be a series, we will address more current event types of sticky situations. Bullying will probably be the thread throughout, but what they're getting bullied for, and bringing in things like suicide and that type of thing. So they discover the simple four-step technique. It's called the halo process. And so at one point, they're in the clubhouse, and they're talking about a bullying situation, and one of them is like, oh, gosh, when I just stop, I feel calm and I feel safe. And so halt is as in stop. So then they wonder, you know, what comes after that. And they kind of figure it out. Well, if I just accept what's happened, I don't have
There's
to like
the
it. Yeah. I don't have to do anything about it, but just accept. Again, that relief of, oh, it's not as big as it seemed. It's not as fearful. So this is how the empowerment starts. And then, again, we use the tree as an analogy for let go. So they realize that they go outside and the big wise old tree is, you know, shedding its leaves. It's fall. Well, if the tree doesn't let go of its leaves, it can't go dormant and have spring come, with which brings the new leaves. So letting go is about all your emotions and the drama and the trauma and so forth. And I'm going through these quickly, but then the last is open to the blessings in disguise. So they use the analogy of spring and the new leaves and new growth. And as I teach with the energy, if you don't see the blessing in disguise right away and while you're practicing this, and even I've had 2 and 10 year blessings show up, but if you just know to go to gratitude, something easy, your pet, a sport, a spouse, all the universe in your subconscious knows is that's the level of energy. Energy isn't real, it's just energy. So that's going to then allow you to stay at that level or higher. And that's where, by shifting, all of a sudden, life shifts. Mm-hmm. Things aren't as traumatic. They doesn't mean you've solved the situation, but if you are managing it and coping with it differently, and for kids, while they're getting help, while they're getting counseling, if they can just feel safe within, and then the thing that we will teach children is about this. If they are in fear, that's all they can create. Mm-hmm. So if they're afraid of that person bullying them or whatever it might be, they can only create more of that. And they're going, but I don't want to. And they need to learn. You can't defy energy. So stop and apply this process and just make it simple. Go to something that you love.
I think that's a great thing that you mentioned about the fear with kids who are being bullied, because every day they become fearful of going to school or having to deal with the bully every day, and to help them overcome that is a huge stepping stone.
Well, and I am to get my street creds, if you will, and because I care, I'm going to all these special in need organizations, board meetings, workshops, and so forth. We plan on going after mainstream kids groups like Boy Scouts, and it's not that they don't have issues, but all these special in need, everything from gay, lesbian, transgender, to autism, to Asperger's, to dyslexia, to bulimia, and so forth. The suicide prevention workshops. But the takeaways I've gotten is that one person can make a difference. And an executive director of one of these organizations told me in a one-on-one meeting we had, the kids that are getting bullied for some things are afraid to leave home because mm-hmm. they don't know if they're going to come home that night. And I just couldn't even fathom that. But we don't realize, and they don't share a lot. If a parent chooses to get involved in their child's life, it will come out. But the kids aren't sharing because they don't want somebody else to make it more forefront. They might get bullied more, and they just don't know how to go about that. And then another thing, I'm partnering with a gal who was bullied at 8. She's now in her teens. She really spoke out about this when a friend of hers was bullied to a much bigger degree. She's written 2 books, and she's now going to the schools in California educating. 3/4 of the room raises their hands when she asked how many have been bullied. Mm-hmm. The teacher's eyes go wide. The parents' eyes go wide because the kids are now in a safe, supportive environment where they can open up. They don't talk or share, but they will raise their hands. How many parents are aware to that degree that children in general, and probably their child, has more going on, but they don't know how to express it, or they're afraid it's going to get on social media? They don't have safe places to go that are readily available.
And that is a huge problem. As a parent of teenagers, I can tell you it is such a huge issue with the bullying and that fear that the kids have. And whether or not that battle of do I even feel safe talking to my teacher or my principal, because will they even do something?
Yes, and you know, when I was a kid, I'm going to be 65 soon, you respected authority. Those were the places that you went to, your teacher, your pastor, your parent, or a sibling. But now, with the peer pressure, you know, we had peer pressure then. But, geez, if you have a wrinkle to all these major things, I am just amazed at the things that kids are getting bullied about. It's because the kids are in fear, and when you're in fear, you're only going to create more of that. So they act out in fear. The bullying and all that, it's not just because we're setting poor examples. That's how it perpetuates itself, and there's a collective energy that is just phenomenal, how quickly it can build and the depths. And because they're creative and resourceful, they're going to have it go viral. And they can take it to levels that we as adults wouldn't even imagine. But here we are. Look at what's happened with social media. It started out being a nice thing, a friendly thing. And in not very long period of time, it has just become a living nightmare.
It has. It has. And the characters in your book are able to figure out for themselves how to stop a lot of that fear that they're feeling with the bully or the money situation and in their families, and work through it to have that bit of gratitude and to really change the direction of how they feel emotionally. I would say that be able to grow emotionally, probably.
Definitely. And then we have some fun examples, and that's where the title came from. So in school, each of them has a different situation. We'll come back to this.
Okay, and we will return, and it looks like we will also be going back to the phone lines when we are finished with our commercial break. We'll be right back with author Deborah Kruger and have our final segment of Sound Off today, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the final segment of Sound Off today. And we have been chatting with author Deborah Kruger, and we're talking about gratitude and learning how to find gratefulness in the darkest of situations. I think that might be a good way to put it, Deborah.
Yes, and how that can help you to lift yourself up by the nature of how energy works and become empowered then to make different choices and have a different outlook.
The mind has a lot of power.
Definitely.
Our thinking
and you connect
patterns.
That with your heart, and oh my goodness.
So how can people find out more about your work that you do, Deborah?
Well, thank you. We are in the process of becoming a nonprofit 501c3, and in the mid term of that, we've been using seed money, but we're raising funds through GoFundMe to create some more working capital. We look to self-publish by the end of the year and launch the book mid-January before tax season. So the working capital is essential now. If you go on GoFundMe, it has a very comprehensive list of how we are going to contribute. The school lunch program, youth centers across the country, it's quite a list. We're going to advocate with congressmen, other nonprofits, and so forth. So when you're on the GoFundMe page, you'll see that. And then I have some promotion things to mention near the end of this.
Okay,
let's see
if we can squeeze in a call before we wrap it up today. Good afternoon. You're on Sound Off.
Hi, good afternoon. That was a nice segment on that book, and I was just confused in regards to the last part about bullying. What constitutes bullying? Is that like internet slander or physical problems? I don't quite understand that in school.
I think nowadays it's all of it.
It's all of that and more. It's verbal, it's emotional, it's physical, it's internet, and when you combine all that and you're holding that within, and every day, every hour, you have more of it coming at you. But bullying has become such a broad term. It pretty much is every way possible. Does that help answer your question?
I wasn't raised with the internet era, excuse me.
And, I wasn't either.
I know that. Oh yeah, that's right. You did say that a little bit ago. The thing of it is that we settled our problems through. In other words, the classic example was playing on the sports field with the kids in grade school, and someone got to be the captain all the time. The last kids that got picked all the time. I was one of them. I know what it felt like. Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And got bullied by the bigger guy. Generally, bullies would not stand up for themselves, because there came a time when I said, you know what? I'm captain today, and no one will challenge me, mm-hmm. not the bullies anyway. And mm-hmm. a tough person won't generally be that way or be a bully. And we used to, if someone wanted to be a bully, you just smack them. And then, you know, then I was captain and I chose the guys that never got chose. That kind of an issue. It's what I'm, it's old fashioned, so to speak.
No, but it's still
what
relevant.
What happened to that?
Well,
that
it's quite frankly, it's because social media. Now, it isn't just a one time thing. It goes viral and it's up there. And now, you know, kids don't have anything better to do, so to say. So they all comment or like or share that. And it is, you know, we all had peer pressure. We cared about what somebody thought of us. Well, now, if you can imagine being blasted on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, the whole shebang, they just want to crawl in a hole and never come out. And it gets worse every day because it gets shared more, the amount of hits. So it's social media that's taken it to a whole nother hemisphere.
The word is sharper than the sword. I got you. So, in other words, that new part of the internet is one of the vices that is involved.
It has taken it beyond the term viral.
And imagine, sir, like these kids have had phones in their pockets now since first, second grade, and they're videoing.
Right.
And it's something I think we all have never experienced in school at all. And I have teenagers, and so I can tell you it's bad.
And for people of our generation, sir, we're just, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm still kind of a dinosaur. I don't use technology for all of its purposes, but the kids certainly do, and they're on the cutting edge with it. So if you can only imagine, it would be like if you were a kid and all of a sudden the whole world knew and they were right in your living room. That's it and worse with social media, with kids. They cannot escape it, and they can't take it back. Once it's posted, even if you take it down, it's still there.
And with that, we're going to have to wrap up our show today. I really appreciate your call to continue
that conversation.
Deborah, where can people go to find out more information? Do you have a website?
Yes, actually, we pulled part of the title of the book. So it's www.adragonstooth.com. And you will see the link for GoFundMe. And from there, you can read. It's quite lengthy because we go into all the ways that we will contribute and then the ways that you will receive based on, you know, once we have published and we have the funds. But what I'd like to do right now today is create more of a quick...
We're out of time.
Oh.
That's okay. It's adragonstooth.com. Thank you, Deborah. Kind of help us get our gratitude started for Thanksgiving.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jamie. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the kids, thank you as well.
Very good. Thank you so much. Tomorrow.